let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. The Milwaukee Journal says John E. Keegan's powerful fiction, Clearwater Summer, conjures recollections of another little book, To Kill a Mockingbird. Library Journal says Clearwater Summer packs the punch of Stephen King's novella, The Body, made into the film Stand By Me, a classic small-town life disrupted by violent death. Incest, rape, and domestic violence lurk in the shadows of Clearwater. Clearwater Summer was published in 1995, the New York Library awarding it the honor of Best Book. Back now, republished and edited by Global Summit House in a special anniversary edition. John Keegan is a native of Spokane, Washington, graduate of Gonzaga University, where he served as student body president, then graduated from Harvard Law School. He has combined his midlife writing career with his lawyering for the Department of Housing and Urban Development in Washington, D.C., the King County Prosecuting Office, the Attorney's Prosecuting Office, and two law firms. Married to Nancy Jill Biddle, together they have four adult children, three of whom, by the way, are lawyers, and three of whom are married to lawyers, also six grandchildren. Son David escaped to become the CEO of Bamboo Hardwoods, an international company. Johnny Keegan, author of Clearwater Summer, also Piper, A Good Divorce, a children's book, No More Beds, and the just-released Orphaned, our guest on This Week in America. Hi, John. Welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us.
It's great to be here, Rick. Thank you. A nice introduction.
Well, it's all your life. This is amazing. And that's where I want to start. What was it about you at age 50, a very successful legal career, you decided to start a writing career? How did that happen that at 50 you decide, I'm going to write some literary fiction? And by the way, you do it very well.
Well, it's good. I wonder, too, why I did it. But the truth is, I was busy lawyering. I also ended up having a family, having kids and all of that. But so I was 50 years old before I was able to release the first issue of Clearwater Summer. And it felt there. I was a comparative literature major in college, and I actually applied from Gonzaga University College to law schools and to comparative lit programs to get a, you know, bachelor's or a PhD even in there. And I ended up, going on the law route. And once you're in it, it's a heavy track. That's why I mentioned my longest trial was 220 days long. It's kind of interesting because what it was about was when we discovered crude oil in Alaska, it was shipped down to Clallam County in Port Angeles in the state of Washington. And they had designed a 12-foot diameter pipeline that would send all that oil to the Midwest. The problem was it crossed the Puget Sound, and everybody was worried that if the pipes broke, we would have the worst oil spill in the Puget Sound area that we ever wanted. So, it was that kind of stuff that was occupying me and keeping me from writing. And then when I started writing, I said, I'm not going to write law stories. I'm not going to write court stuff. I want to write things that real people do.
And that's what you've done. But you're talking about a fascinating legal career. I see some stories there as well at some point on down the line. We'll talk about that as we go through the program. John E. Keegan, K-E-E-G-A-N, is our guest on the program. Main book we're talking about is Clearwater Summer, special anniversary edition of that. Orphan has just been released. He's got several other books that we'll mention that are in print as well, Piper and A Good Divorce, that we'll talk about. Let's talk about where this began for you, where, how, when, this interest in literary fiction. You mentioned in college it was something you were seriously considering pursuing from a professional standpoint. When did you get this interest? Was this back in you as a child and what you read?
Well, it very much was. I'll take just two examples. In high school, I read Crime and Punishment by Fyodor Dostoevsky. It's a thick book. I mean, I think it's 500 pages long in a paperback. But I was fascinated. This guy killed a pawnbroker, and I was still fascinated with the story because I felt like there was some humanity in this guy, Raskolnikov, that I wanted to find and did so. So it was that kind of a thing. I thought, oh, my God, I love that kind of deep story. Also, I was still in college when we had To Kill a Mockingbird, another kind of story again. I don't know why it turns out. Somebody gets killed in that one too, but but there's a story that surrounds it. And anyway, because I took the legal route, I really didn't feel I had the time or the energy to actually start writing. And I really wasn't sure I was serious. Before I did my first book, I actually went to a writing class at the University of Washington, and it was a two-year program. And so I had a chance to kind of listen to people that wrote books. I had a chance to kind of play act. We'd write scenes for each other, and we would then talk through them, all that. So anyway, I came back to it. My kids were more grown up. After 50 years, I finally hit the track, and I'm ready to run.
Well, and you're doing it, and you're very fast out of the starting blocks. You really are doing an excellent job with this, the four books that I mentioned. I want to go back to Clearwater Summer, that's received over the years rave reviews. It's back out now. It's been republished and edited, released by Global Summit House. It's available now. This goes back to 1995. You had a lot of attention with this book, literary praise for the story. Let's talk about now. Why did you decide to republish now? And then we'll go back and we'll focus on the story a little bit.
Well, for one thing, I finally did retire from lawyering in 2018, and I did have some other book ideas. One of them, though, was to write a different thing. Clearwater Summer, I ended up, the kids were only 14 and 15 in the first issue. I thought there's more consequences when the kids are, like graduates from high school. I moved them up to be graduates from high school in this small town of Clearwater, and then told kind of the same story, but I was able, because they're older, to kind of have, more sensitivity to danger and more of everything in them. And so I did that and made some other changes. But I also was honored by the 25-year thing. I thought that was great. It was a good piece of luck for me. I still like the story. But the funny thing was, the publishers that were looking at the book kept saying, it's a good story. What it needs is a trial. You need a trial scene. And I didn't want to do trial scenes. I just got done lawyering.
You're running away from trial scenes.
Yeah, but I actually ended up putting a trial scene in there. And then I had more than one publisher that wanted to do the book. And so that worked. The trials, I still like the trial scene. Even the lawyer that comes in is a very interesting character. He's a, Jewish lawyer who's doing a case in the state of Washington in a small county, a small town, So, but anyway, that's where that story went.
Let's talk. This goes back to 1959. The president is Dwight Eisenhower. Some of us will remember Dwight Eisenhower in the early days back in, 1959. Let's talk about the three main characters. These are teenagers, as you mentioned, just graduating from school. You've got this association. They've got their whole world in front of them, and then danger lurks ahead for them. Give us a little, without too much, giving away too much, a little bit of the story here.
Well, what happens, the story, Mr. Baker, Wellesley Baker's father, is kind of a hero in the local town here because he has a stock car called the Pink Lady. And in that county, they have stock car races in the summer. People bring their jalopy in there and race them. Anyway, one of the chapters in the story, we're watching the race, and the yellow flag goes up, the caution flag on the rail, on the track, because we see a Cocker Spaniel run from the stands onto the track. All the other stock cars slow down, but guess what? Mr. Baker keeps the speed up and slams into the Cocker Spaniel, rolling him off the track. So That's a little bit of a hint about old Mr. Baker. The other thing about it, early in the story, you'll see a strange thing. Even though there's these three kids, Wellesley Baker at the center of that. Will Bradford is the narrator of the story. His dad is running a hardware store that's not making enough money to pay the bills. And then Taylor Clark is the third part of that thing. But anyway, they couldn't go into the Baker house, but they took their bikes. They stood on their bikes and looked into the kitchen window one day, and they were eating dinner, and Mr. Baker stands up from the table, throws his food in his wife's face, and says, "This is horseshit. you know, and, you know, we're like, whoa, what did that come? Wellesley tried to intervene at that point, and he grabbed her by the jaw and bent her neck back and says, what do you want to do? Go live with your whore sister. So that's another. Wellesley has a sister, Tiffany, who has moved out. But anyway, that's the setting of that scene, which, you know, packs the violence and really the story is a big part of that.
It's the story, by the way, Clearwater Summer. It's just been republished and edited by Global Tubman House. Book available now wherever books are sold. Amazon.com. We'll direct you there. But anywhere where you find books, that's Clearwater Summer. You know, I see this book as a movie. Have you given any thought to doing this as a motion picture?
Well, you know, that's funny you say it. In the last month, I did get somebody that does movies. I won't say who they are, but they said that they want to do a screenplay of this. It could be either a movie or a TV series. I don't know, but anyway, I'm not counting on that happening, but I, you know, have given them some ideas about the book or whatever. So anyway, it's out there, but I didn't, that's funny that you took that same track, because there's something magic about this damn book. I mean,
yes.
The others are good ones, but Clearwater seems to, there's something about it. Maybe it's that center character, Mr. Baker, and Wellesley for sure is a heroine, a strong, strong lady. And I wanted to write about strong ladies, not weak ladies, you know.
Well, and you do that in all of your books. And in this, you are a very visual writer, so I can see this unfolding as I'm reading the book. So the book is Clearwater Summer. Now, I'm going to talk about all of the books and then the children's book here in particular. But the covers on the book, I love the cover on Clearwater Summer. Talk about the background, because the covers are important to you.
Well, they are. What I did, one of the reasons in republishing Clearwater Summer and then in actually doing Orphaned, I have now a granddaughter, Maya Keegan, who is an artist herself. She did with her own hand both the covers for both the Clearwater Summer, which you have, that we have the copies of, and
yes,
also for Orphaned.
Yeah, it's up there.
And so that is another reason. I guess it was a connection with the grandkids, and I, you know, in some way, maybe I can model a little bit, and they can start writing their own stories too.
Well, you're a good
movies. God knows.
Well, yes, you're a good inspiration for them, and I love the book cover. It's one of those that jumps out at you because it's so well done. And I want to talk about here for a second. No More Beds, because this book is meaning very special to you. I mean, the story as well as the book cover. Talk about the origin of this book.
Well, it's a funny one, because here I combine two things. One of my, you know, favorite clients was Seattle Children's Hospital, and they live in a neighborhood of wealthy, big, nice houses all around it. So I represented Seattle Children's Hospital, and every time they wanted to expand or provide an emergency helicopter landing place, or in this case, to actually significantly increase the square footage and the number of beds on the hospital, we had this rabid opposition, you know, the neighborhoods represented by attorneys. And so we finally won. The city of Seattle okayed this thing. We got our master plan for this. And so I said, we got to have a celebratory dinner. I want to invite all the hospital staff, doctors, all of the things to do it. And let's have a big party at one of the big restaurants so we can do it. So I gathered together, I don't know, there were like 80 people in this room that we honored. And I had this bright idea. I said, God, you know, this deserves a book, because our cry was always no more beds. We don't have enough beds. So I asked, at that point, they were 8 years old. This was now Emma Carlstrom and Maya Keegan.
Wow.
I said, look, here's the deal. If you illustrate every page of this book, we can collaborate on the text, but this is the theme, you know, no more beds. We want to show a situation where you had to expand the hospital to take care of all these kids that were coming there. And so that's the origins of the book. And people, everybody that's in the audience, all these big deal people that run the hospital, they wanted autographs, not from me, but from my two grandchildren.
From the grandkids.
So they spent the evening autographing books for all these, you know, important people from Seattle Children's Hospital.
What a neat family story that lives on forever, and I love that. So maybe the next generation of Keegans, rather than lawyers, will be illustrators and authors. It looks like you're starting another family occupation there.
Well, that's exactly what I do. I feel that one of the jobs as a parent and a grandparent is to kind of model some of the behaviors that allow you to do amazing things. And, you know, it's not always amazing to be tied down in a big court case, but there's something about telling a story that I think reaches everybody.
Well, they've done such a nice job in working with you and being an inspiration with the book cover and that story, No More Beds. But the time is going by so quickly. If you just joined us, John E. Keegan, K-E-E-G-A-N, is our guest on the program today. You'll find his books at Amazon, all of the usual places. The book Clearwater Summer was a hit back in 1995, never really went away, and it's back now in a 25th anniversary edition. I'm going to talk about Orphaned here in a second. Well, let's talk about Orphaned now. This is a newly released book. A few minutes, tell me a little bit about the book. Dean Hostler is a body shop guy, sort of the star of the book. Tell me a little bit about the background of the story, Orphaned.
Well, yeah, this is a family of a mother and a father and a young son who's got an attention deficit disorder. So he's been passed over for a couple of years of advancement in school. And his mother is very concerned about it. Dean, you know, less so because he doesn't achieve the impact. But what happens is he's a body shop guy, and a guy comes in, was a high school buddy of his, saw him. His car was banged up, and Dean had fixed it. He pounded out all the dents and all of that. And as he's going, he said, "Hey, Dean." He said, "They're selling thoroughbred horses down at the Long Acres racetrack. Why don't you come down and buy one?" Well, Dean is saying, "My God, this is perfect. The birthday's tonight for my son. I'm going to surprise Lorraine and Ricky, and I'm going to go down there." He goes down to the auction place, and when a horse comes in that he'd seen before the auction started, he said, "Oh, my God, that's the horse I met with that nice lady out in front of the stall there." And so they start the bid, and you know, the bidders, they go fast. They go, "I've got a bid, but I got a four, I got four, I got five, yes. Everybody needs six. Who's six? Who's seven? Who's eight? Who's?" And they go on, find it stopped. The bidding stopped at 16. There was only one other guy bidding in the front row. Dean was, of course, clear to the back. So the guy comes out and registers. He said, "You've got to go over to the registrar window and you know, pay for the horse." So he's proud. He said, "That's fine." He said, "Yeah, where is it? Point me. I'll go do it." He goes over there to the registrar. The guy comes in, and he hands him the ticket that showed which horse that he won the bid on. And he says, "Sir, you owe us $16,000. And Dean says, "$16,000? He said, "It was $1,600. He said, I won the bid for $1,600. And the guy says, "No, you got it for $16,000. He said, and Dean says, "Well, the guy was mumbling. I wasn't sure. I can't do that." He said, "Well, you got to pay for the horse." He said, "Do you have any credit, anything you can sign over, any credit to do this?" Anyway, Dean pulls out of his pocket the title to the Nashua trailer, which is the family home, and signs it over to the guy. He goes home proudly to the door, and he announces this to Lorraine. He's late for the party. He whispers to her, he said, "Hey, I bought a horse for Ricky. We're going to have a horse for our boy." And she now slams the door on his hand. He said, "This is the end of it. This marriage is over, and you're not going to let Ricky see that horse." And that's how the evening ended. Dean went out and slept in his car down at the Long Acres racetrack. And the story goes from there. But that's kind of, I kind of believe in the idea of beginning in the book, put the main characters in some kind of peril, big stakes. They could lose something big.
Well, and this is the case. And not only did he overpay for the horse, he finds out later he bought something that eats. So he has to keep feeding the horse. So this is a double dilemma for Dean. That's in the book Orphaned, which is now available. Got a couple minutes left here. I'll talk very briefly about the other two books, which are still in publication. Let's talk about Piper. You've got the 17-year-old, the wife of a newspaper editor dies, but this really changes Piper's life forever. Briefly, what happens?
Well, here's the deal. First, Piper, this is another female heroine of my story, like Wellesley Baker, but she was adopted by Catherine Scanlon and Catherine's husband. And the story starts out, guess what? Catherine Scanlon has just drowned from a session in the jacuzzi. Her hair got sucked down the drain. She couldn't get up. Her mouth filled with water, and she died. But the jacuzzi, you say, whose jacuzzi is it? The jacuzzi is owned by John Carlyle, who is the owner of the Stampede newspaper, the small town where she lives and everything. So that's the story. Is, you know, oh my God, what happened here with that? So she, in you know, communion with her mother, she shaves all the hair off her head and kind of goes rogue, and you know, is just, you can understand, mad as hell.
Yes.
Throughout, and wants to find out you know, how this happened and all of that. So there's a lot of culprits who may end up having to, you know, see Piper's ire over this thing, and that's the rest of the story. But she's a hero as well, and love her, and
another strong female character,
her companion, in you know, in Clearwater Summer.
Well, yeah, another strong females that you have in the book, and that book is called Piper. That's still available. I'm going to take a minute here at the end to talk about the final of the four books that are out there. A Good Divorce, Cyrus Sapleton. Here's the words he wasn't expecting from his wife. She wants a divorce. The title of the book is Good Divorce. Briefly, what's the backstory there?
Wait, on which book are you saying, Rick, to be sure?
Yeah, Good Divorce.
Oh, The Good Divorce.
Yes.
Yeah, well, this is another, the beginning of the book starts this way. This is a marriage with two kids that are like, you know, still not even teenagers yet, young family. And Cyrus is the attorney, and he's kind of the breadwinner for the family. And he comes back from, he was over for a legal thing on the coast in Washington State, and he comes home, and things are tight there. His wife, in the meantime, we're talking about Gloria Steinem era. This was an era of kind of open marriage.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, feminism on the rise, which is all a good thing. But it wasn't something that, you know, the husband really understood. Anyway, the next day, she actually drives down to his office in Seattle. He's part of a law firm in Seattle, and he has no appointment, but he barges in and says, look, I want to tell you a couple of things here. And what he says is, we're getting a divorce. Number one. Number two, I've already got a divorce lawyer. And number three, I want custody of the two kids. And that sets the stage. That's the opening of that story, where, you know, husband tries to rescue himself and,
yes,
and the kids and all of that. So it's I've been divorced before with some kids, and this is not that story, but I had a great empathy for that situation.
Yes.
A lot of people, they get divorced and the kids get it the hardest. And I don't know, I just was drawn to writing some version of that. It's not my story in particular, but it is a story about a husband and wife trying to wrestle with the important job of taking care of the kids, what happens to them.
You know, there are several common denominators as we're talking with John about his books. One being, they all really start fast. This is not an author where you've got to go, you know, seven chapters in before something finally happens. It starts, pay attention. The first, don't think I'm going to like sort of read this, watch TV for the first chapter, because you're going to miss stuff. So just to pay attention right from the very beginning. And the other is the fact that these are really remarkable stories that we see unfold before our very eyes. You can see why there's been so much critical acclaim, and it's all justified. And books, once again, Clearwater Summer, 25th anniversary. It's out there now. It's available. You'll find it at all the usual places. It's been republished and re-edited by Global Summit House. Global Summit House is a publishing and marketing company that caters to the author's needs. That's out there. The newest is Orphaned, Piper, we've talked about, a good divorce we've talked about, and the children's book with the cover illustrated by the grandkids, No More Bed. So all of this is out there. And John, the time has gone by way too quickly. It's been fun having you with us. Thank you so much for being with us on the program. Keep writing. We'll keep chatting. I loved having you with us on the program today.
Well, thank you, Rick. I've listened to other of your broadcasts. You're the real deal. You're a very human person. You make it easy as an interviewer because you're not trying to trick anybody. You're basically trying to draw out from them their stories, you know, their life. So you do a wonderful job of that.
Very
so
nice
thank
of you to say. And you are a talented, gifted writer. So it's a pleasure to have you on and to be able to share your talents with the people out there. And again, the book is The Books Written by John E. Keegan. That's K-E-E-G-A-N. If you do the Amazon, you go to the author's page there, you'll find information on all the books, can order them and enjoy them. And of course, a link on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. We're back on today's program right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.